Good evening, and welcome to eBible Fellowship's Bible study in the book of 1 Samuel. Tonight will be study number 92, and we're going to begin by reading 1 Samuel chapter 5, verse 10. Therefore they sent the Ark of God to Ekron, and it came to pass as the Ark of God came to Ekron that the Ekronites cried out, saying, "They have brought about the Ark of the God of Israel to us, to slay us and our people." So they sent and gathered together all the lords of the Philistines and said, "Send away the Ark of the God of Israel and let it go again to his own place, that it slay us not and our people." For there was a deadly destruction throughout all the city. The hand of God was very heavy there, and the men that died not were smitten with the emerods, and the cry of the city went up to heaven. Well, we've been talking about this the last few studies, and we see that the plague that developed in the land of the Philistines as a result of their trespass in taking the Ark of God into their possession when they had no right to do that. God didn't direct them to do that. They did it out of their own pride. And then they set the Ark before their false god Dagon, and they basically were bringing the Ark before their god as a trophy, a spoils of victory. Well, they might have won the battle with Israel, but as a result of taking the Ark, it cost the Philistines greatly with the lives of many of their people and many others that did not die. Had this terrible affliction of the emerods. There were mice that were running rampant in their land, spreading the disease, spreading a plague. And it was just a horrible thing. And they realized it had something to do with the Ark and its presence, so they moved it from Ashdod to Gath. And the plague spread to Gath. Then from Gath, they moved it to Ekron, the city of Ekron. And the Ekronites realized what was happening, and they began to cry out that they had brought the Ark of God to slay us and our people. Now, in the next chapter, in chapter 6, when they've decided to send the Ark back to Israel, and they're told that they must give a trespass offering, it says in verse 4, "Then said they, 'What shall be the trespass offering which we shall return to him?' They answered, 5 golden emerods and 5 golden mice, according to the number of the lords of the Philistines. For one plague was on you all and on your lords." And that's how we know the mice aren't mentioned in chapter 5, but we know, according to the golden image of the mice that they make, the mice had to be part of the plague. And it's also said to be on all of the lords, on all of their cities. Now, we read about 3 of out of the 5 major Philistine cities, but the implication is that this affliction had spread to all the land of the country of the Philistines. And historically, we understand this. God can do this easily. He can do anything. It wasn't difficult for God to begin to send a plague upon them for their transgression in taking the Ark to themselves. And yet spiritually, we wonder, well, what is the point? What spiritual significance is it that the Ark went from city to city to city and the plague spread to all these cities of the Philistines? We recognize that the Philistines are a picture of the church under the power of the enemy, Satan, and they're the flip side of the coin from the previous chapter, the empty city of Shiloh, which no longer houses the Ark. Well, the Philistines had the Ark of God in their possession, That is, as the churches were they had oversight over the Word of God, which the Ark represented. And one thing that this spreading of the plague in chapter 5 teaches us is that God's judgment is upon all of the church. You know, maybe some of you remember, but back before 1994, in the late 80s or early 90s, we had some understanding that God was judging the churches because of their apostasy. We understood that many of the churches were unfaithful, but we did not know that it was all churches. And so, in a sense, the plague began as God opened up the understanding of his people to the falling away of the churches and congregations. And we realized that, well, this really is impacting the overwhelming majority of churches. It's so difficult to find even a reasonably faithful church. We understood that. But as the period of the Great Tribulation, and the Great Tribulation is also another way of saying the time in which judgment began at the house of God, as it developed and as it went along, we learn more from the Bible. And finally, we understood that the judgment of God was upon all churches without exception. And yet, that was a later development. For a period of time, many believers were going from church to church and trying to find a faithful congregation or reasonably faithful to the Word of God. We thought that there very, very rare, but there must be a church out there that still wants to do things God's way and is faithful. But again, as time went on, finally the Bible opened up and it was understood that the judgment of God is 100% upon all churches and congregations in all the world. No exception. And so we can see in some ways how the spread of the plague upon the churches, at least as far as our information concerning it, developed. And it started with some, and then we realized, well, this is upon all. And I think that's one thing we can understand from what we're reading with the Ark carrying this plague from city to city until all the land of the Philistines is finally being judged by God because of their transgression. Now, let's move to 1 Samuel chapter 6 and verse 1, and it says, "And the Ark of Jehovah was in the country of the Philistines 7 months. And the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, saying, What shall we do to the Ark of Jehovah? Tell us wherewith we shall send it to his place. And they said, If ye send away the Ark of the God of Israel, send it not empty, but in any wise return him a trespass offering. Then ye shall be healed, and it shall be known to you why his hand is not removed from you." So God makes it a point to tell us the length of time that the Ark was in the country of the Philistines. It was taken, it was captured, and brought to Ashdod, and then the trouble began for the Philistines. And we don't know how long, but then it was transported to the city of Gath. And the trouble continued, the plagues continued. Men continued to die and to be struck with emrods. The mice were continuing to multiply and probably carrying the plague. And then the Ark again was moved to Ekron. And those are all the locations that God tells us about. And so this took place over the course of 7 months giving the plague ample time to develop and for people to experience sore affliction. And then finally, the Philistines had enough. They realized that if we do not get rid of the plague, well, we're just going to continue to suffer. Or if we don't get rid of the ark, we're going to continue to suffer at the hands of the God of Israel. And so we must do something. And so they call their priests and diviners and try to figure out a strategy, what they can do to end this nightmare that they found themselves in. Well, before we move on to the next verses, let's think about this 7 months period. 7 months that the ark was captured and was in enemy hands in the possession of the Philistine people. 7 months also in which it was not in the land of Israel. It was not in Shiloh or in any area of the nation of Israel. And this 7 months, we'll see, represents the Great Tribulation period. But what we do whenever we have any word in the Bible is we try to search the Bible to discover if that word or phrase or, in this case, time period is used anywhere else in the Bible. And it so happens that we do find 7 months mentioned twice in one other place that I can find. I don't find 7 months mentioned anywhere else except in the book of Ezekiel in chapter 39. And now before I read this passage, well, I'll just set it up a little bit. This is a chapter dealing with Gog and Magog. And chapter 38 of Ezekiel, Gog and Magog formed, or God details them, and the assault begins, and they come against Israel. Now, Gog and Magog are mentioned here in Ezekiel, and only one other place in the Bible, and that's in Revelation chapter 20, where it says in verse 7 and verse 8, "And when the 1,000 years are expired, Satan shall be loosed out of his prison and shall go out to deceive the nations which are in the four quarters of the earth, Gog and Magog, to gather them together to battle, the number of whom is as the sand of the sea." And I'll read verse 9 also. "And they went up on the breadth of the earth and compassed the camp of the saints about and the beloved city, and fire came down from God out of heaven and devoured them." And that's all we read about Gog and Magog. Now, we have a very good idea. We know exactly what's in view in Revelation 20. Satan is loosed out of his prison. That is simultaneous with the end of the church age, because it says in Revelation 11, "The beast ascends out of the bottomless pit and overcomes the two witnesses." And this is when Satan is loosed. His prison is the bottomless pit. And so the ascension of Satan is here in Revelation 20 is the same thing we read about in Revelation 11 when he ascends out of the bottomless pit. And that's the end of the church age, the death of the two witnesses, the death of the gospel witness to the world for that 3.5 days while the two witnesses are lying dead in the street. And that identifies with the 2300 evening mornings, the first part of the Great Tribulation. And the verses 8 and 9 of Revelation 20 are language describing Satan's assault, his gathering together of Gog and Magog to battle when he comes against the camp of the saints. It is language describing Satan gathering all the unsaved forces within the churches and the congregations. And that's what we have in view in Ezekiel 38 and 39, where God expands upon Gog and Magog. And it says in verse 1 of Ezekiel 39, Therefore, thou son of man, prophesy against Gog, and say, Thus saith the Lord Jehovah, Behold, I am against thee, O Gog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, and I will turn thee back and leave but the sixth part of thee, and will cause thee to come up from the north parts, and will bring thee upon the mountains of Israel. And I will smite thy bow out of thy left hand, and will cause thine arrows to fall out of thy right hand. Thou shalt fall upon the mountains of Israel, thou and all thy bands, and the people that is with thee. I will give thee unto the ravenous birds of every sort, and to the beasts of the field to be devoured. Thou shalt fall upon the open field, for I have spoken, and saith the Lord Jehovah, and I will send a fire on Magog, and among them that dwell carelessly in the isles. They shall know that I am Jehovah. Now, I won't say that I understand everything in these chapters, but from what I do understand, it appears that Satan comes against, finally, the believers outside of the churches, outside of the congregations. You can read about that in the previous chapter when he takes note of those dwelling in unwalled cities and villages, and that would be the believers that have left the congregations, and an evil thought comes into his mind that he will go up to the mountains of Israel against them. And remember, God commanded believers to flee to the mountains where he would feed us. And so the assault of Satan comes against the believers, but God now fights against him, and Gog and Magog, Satan and his emissaries, which we can understand to be the churches, fall upon the mountains of Israel. They are defeated, and their bodies are lying in the open field for the fowls of the air. And this seems to identify with May 21 and 2011, where they no longer can assault the true believers. Satan was given a commission. He was given authority to rule, according to Revelation 13, for 42 months, or the duration of the Great Tribulation. Once the Great Tribulation ended, Satan's rule and his authority was removed, and he was defeated on that victorious day when the Lord Jesus saved all the elect. He opened up the prison house and rescued all the elect in the kingdom of darkness, and Satan was deposed from his high position in the churches, and so on. And so Ezekiel 39 seems to describe that battle of the day of judgment, Armageddon, in which Satan falls and his army. And it goes on to say a little further down in verse 11, And it shall come to pass in that day that I will give unto Gog a place there of graves in Israel, the valley of the passengers on the east of the sea, and shall stop the noses of the passengers. And there shall they bury Gog and all his multitude, and they shall call it the valley of Hamon Gog. And 7 months shall the house of Israel be burying of them, that they may cleanse the land. Yea, all the people of the land shall bury them, and shall be to them a renown the day that I shall be glorified, saith the Lord Jehovah. And they shall sever out men of continual employment, passing through the land to bury with the passengers those that remain upon the face of the earth, to cleanse it. After the end of 7 months shall they search. And the passengers that pass through the land, when any seeth a man's bone, then shall he set up a sign by it till the buriers have buried it in the valley of Hamon Gog. And also the name of the city shall be Hamona. Thus shall they cleanse the land. And now, again, in this passage, 11 through 16, we have 7 months mentioned two different times, and it's the only other place in the Bible that 7 months is mentioned outside of 1 Samuel 6 and verse 1. unless it could be implied somewhere. For instance, there might be something that happens in the fifth month and another thing that happens in the 12th month, 7 months later. But as far as explicitly stated, it's only found here and back in 1 Samuel chapter 6. And in both cases, it identifies with the great tribulation. Now, here in Ezekiel 39, it's very exceedingly complicated language. And I don't want to try to get into understanding each one of these verses. It's something for us to study and to look further into. But right now, I don't think I can. I don't know a lot of what God is saying. But we do know, because of Revelation 20, how God identifies Gog and Magog with the great tribulation. And it so happens we read about 7 months in connection with Gog and Magog. Well, let's think about the 7 months and see how else we can relate this to the great tribulation. And that is by the number seven. Well, first of all, we know the historical context. It certainly fits the character of the Great Tribulation, the removal of the presence of God from his people, and so on. That fits perfectly with everything we know about the character, the spiritual character of the Great Tribulation, that God removed himself from the church, but also the length of time. The number seven. In some other places where God uses a historical situation to typify the Great Tribulation, in the Old Testament, he also uses the number seven. In Genesis chapter 41, we read of a seven-year famine that also historically was a period of time that identifies with the Great Tribulation. In Genesis 41 and verse 36, when Joseph has interpreted Pharaoh's dream, and he says, "And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine." And we don't have to guess regarding this seven-year famine. In Acts chapter 7 in the New Testament, God tells us that the seven-year famine was a time of great affliction, it says in the King James. But the word affliction is the Greek word translated as affliction is the same word translated as tribulation in Matthew 24 and elsewhere. It is great tribulation, the very same two words. That God says that the famine, which lasted 7 years, was a period of great tribulation. And so we see again the number seven. Also, there is another historical period of time when Judah came under assault through the Babylonians. And God spoke of a 70-year period, which would be 7 times 10. The completeness of seven, which identifies with perfection of the judgment. And in 2 Chronicles 36, it says in verse 20, "And them that had escaped from the sword carried he away to Babylon, where they were servants to him and his sons until the reign of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of Jehovah by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbaths, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years, or 70 years, 609 B.C. until 539 B.C. was that 70-year period, and that also typified the Great Tribulation and the 7 months of 1 Samuel 6:1 is another period of time that God is giving that likewise typifies the actual Great Tribulation, which turned out to be 23 full years 8,400 days. And the number 84 breaks down to 7 times 12, and then you just add zeros for 8,400. And again, we see 7 in view in the number 84. So here we can be very confident that the Ark of Jehovah, which was in the country of the Philistines for 7 months, that period of time is representing the entire period of the Great Tribulation. And then it says in verse 2, and the Philistines called for the priests and the diviners, saying, what shall we do to the Ark of Jehovah? Tell us wherewith we shall send it to his place. The Philistines, the lords, who are the rulers of these cities, each city had a lord who ruled over it. They call for their religious people. The priests were mentioned back in 1 Samuel 5 in verse 5. Therefore, neither the priest of Dagon, the idol, had his own priests. And so these were, they were not priests like we understand Israel to have priests who were legitimate priests. These men were idol worshippers. They were priests of a false god. And the diviners also. Now, the word it's translated diviner is an interesting word, and so is how it's used in the Bible. So in our next study, we're going to take a closer look at divining and diviners such as Balaam. And just to get a better understanding of this word before we continue on further in this chapter of 1 Samuel chapter 6. But at this time, we're going to stop, and please, if you can, join with us in our next time together as we continue in the study of the book of 1 Samuel.